Ghoulish greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of my good friend, Bobby Mackey, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow. Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift. Whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from tropical paradise to remote village, from Pueblo, Colorado to Pawtucket, Rhode Island, and everything in between, it is greatly appreciated. This week's special city shoutouts go to Elkhorn, Nebraska, Vienna, Austria, Galway, Ireland, Montebello, California, Hutchinson, Kansas, and Carcofo, France. Definitely need a passport for this week's city's special shoutouts, and while you have it handy, use it, and now we find ourselves in Germany. While there are many things to do and see here, like explore the Black Forest, dip your toe in the pristine water, that is Lake Constance, check out one of their numerous national parks, check out the Bavarian Alps, and much, much more, I am more interested in Franz Frederick Karl Gropler. That name may sound just a wee bit familiar, as I did mention him in my vampire killer episode. No, no, he wasn't one of the serial killers. He was the executioner. He was a Royal Prussian executioner, serving from 1906 and somewhat forced into retirement in 1937. Franz has at least 144 executions under his belt, possibly more. He was known as the Red Judge. The execution methods were mostly by axe and then the guillotine. Now, in 1924, Gropler would sign a contract that would make him the sole executioner in northern Germany. His attire was the traditional tail coat with a top hat, white gloves. You'd think he was going out for a night out on the town. His pay was nice for those days, I would imagine so anyways. Each month, he was given 136 gold marks. Now, this was whether there were any executions that month or not. And in addition to this, for every execution he conducted, you know, there's different, I see that he was given 60 gold marks, and other sites say 300 gold marks each execution. So huge difference. Don't know what exactly it was, but it's nice to know that every month he got a certain amount, regardless of how many, if any, executions for that specific month. And so basically he had to be available whenever they needed him. And he had to have his assistants available as well. Franz was a man of many, many talents. He was not only an executioner, he was a talented musician. He was a postal services worker and a butcher, just to name a few. Now, I wish I could say that he lived the rest of his life in peace and enjoyed retirement and then maybe died in his sleep, but no such luck. I found this disturbing information on findagrave.com. Quote, in 1945, Karl Gropler was arrested by the Soviet military at his residence in Magdeburg. The arrest was based presumably on the execution of four communists, which he had made back in 1934 in Hamburg Remand Prison. Gropler died January 30th, 1946 in Soviet custody. Unquote. So to me, that's really sad that he died not a free man. It's not like he chose the people that he was going to execute. You know, he was just doing what he was told. It's not like he walked up to a line of people and said, I pick you, 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 and hell, why not? How about you? Hey, little one in the back, you over there. No, just doesn't make any sense to me. So now I will talk just about a mere handful of people that was executed by Franz Frederick Karl Gropler. Friedrich Schumann, he was one of Germany's many serial killers. He was referred to as the Terror of Falkenhagen Lake. He was a serial killer with a death toll of at least 7 people. And in addition to that, he was also a serial rapist, raping at least 11 women, possibly more. He lived a young and short-lived, dishonest life. At the time of his execution, he was only 28 years old. Now, it's no wonder that this young man strayed from honest living. His life at home as a child was really anything but normal. His father was a thug with a lengthy rap sheet, and he was a prolific alcoholic. Don't know if there was abuse involved, but it just was not a happy home. Couldn't find anything on his mom. And if this wasn't bad enough, Friedrich's grandfather was a known pedophile. What's up with these pedophiles, man? You see this in a lot of serial killer cases where their upbringing was not the best, but there are so many people out there who have had shitty lives as children and grew up to be normal and happy human beings. It sucks his life as a kid was crappy. I get that, but come on. I mean, seriously, from 4th grade to 12th grade, I had friends. Sure, some were really great friends, but I had a group of bullies that bugged me every single day that I went to school, making my life a living hell. And I'm not going to lie when I say that every single day was a struggle. Life sucked. But did I become a serial killer or go and shoot up a school because I was mad? Hell no. It was hard, but you just get through it. You push through it. You don't punish other people. Now, Friedrich, he becomes fascinated with guns at a very young age. And as a child, he begins taking pleasure in practice shooting. His targets? Animals. No beer cans, soda cans, or other non-living targets required when it comes to this human. While he is still a teenager, he claims his very first victim, his own cousin. He claimed that the gun accidentally went off. Now, he gets a slap on the wrist for that deadly offense. He spends a stint in correctional institute. He fought in the First World War and is given the Iron Cross Second Class, rewarding him for his phenomenal marksmanship. He had a tons of practice as a child, as we know. Just ask the animals.
And his cousin.
It is after World War I when he would really wreak havoc. With 7 confirmed murders, possibly more, over a dozen attempted murders, several rapes, throw in a few arson cases and several robberies. I mean, this man did it all. He raped, he murdered, he burglarized, he started fires. He was unstoppable. Or was he? He is thankfully captured in Berlin in mid-1919. This dangerous man is finally off the streets and no longer a free man and can't hurt anybody else. Now that's a hell of a lot to be grateful for. I'm sure the citizens danced in the streets. On the day of his execution, August 27th, 1921, a lawyer shared his quick encounter with the executioner. And I quote Murderpedia.com, quote, "At the end of the corridor, I had to give way to a broad-shouldered man. He looked like a transport worker. A high button and formal jacket looked strange on him. His closely cropped skull rested upon a bull neck. In spite of the faint light, he looked suntanned and healthy. Never before had I seen Executioner Gropler from Magdeburg, but as he passed me with a slight bow, I knew it was him. Anyone who had any business in the Criminal Court of Justice knew about Gropler. He had been a horse butcher previously. Each month he collected a small fixed salary and had in return to be ready with his massive axe and his 3 skilled assistants at the demand of the state attorney." Unquote. August 27th, 1921, at 6 a.m., the doomed serial killer is escorted to the Plötzensee prison courtyard, where he is beheaded by axe. Fritz Haarman I talked about in the Vampire Killer episode, so I'm not going to spend too much time on this German serial killer, as he had his very own episode a few weeks back. He gained many notorious nicknames during his time as a free man, the Butcher of Hanover, the Vampire of Hanover, and the Wolfman of Hanover. Just kidding, it's just Wolfman. You'd think it would be Wolfman of Hanover, but whatever. Now, he has at least 27 murders connected to him, but the numbers are believed to be extremely much higher, like in the hundreds. Now, one thing that the authorities did with Fritz, and it's something I hadn't shared in the other episode, was that they had shown him several pictures of children, asking for him to help identify any of them. He refused to do this. He claimed that he couldn't remember, or that the children that they were showing him just did not ring a bell. I mean, most of these children, if not all of them, were linked to him. Many of their clothing had been found in his house of terrors. Now, don't get me wrong, he was not denying a single thing. He was extremely proud of the fact that he was a child murderer. It, like, one of his biggest accomplishments that he could achieve, you know? So weird. And so he would simply just look at the pictures, look at the officers, shrug, and smugly say something like, "I probably killed him," or "charge it to me, it's all right with me." I mean, He was saying this like it was simply one ordering a side of shrimp at a restaurant or a small salad. "Yeah, sure, add that to the bill, please." On December 2nd, 1924, the Victoria Advocate reported this, quote, "So revolting have the disclosures at the trial of Fritz Haarman become that the judge has finally excluded all spectators from the courtroom in which the murderer of 27 boys confesses in details to each crime. Haarman says he killed the boys by biting their necks with his fang-like teeth. He was unable to identify all of his victims, but he said he probably killed all of them. Bleached skulls and bones fished from the muddy waters of the River Seine were exhibited in court today. There were 285 pieces of bone in all, especially thighs and skulls. The prosecutor claimed all belonged to the victims of the human vampire," unquote. Friedrich Heinrich Karl Fritz Haarman was executed April 15th, 1925.
"I am guilty, gentlemen. But hard swords may be, I want to die as a man. I repent, but I do not fear death."
While he may not have feared death, I'm sure his young victims were absolutely terrified during their last moments on Earth. Fritz Heinrich Angerstein was a mass murderer, and he was responsible for the massacre of 8 people in his very own home. He was born into a large family. There were 10 children altogether. His father was a hard and respected worker. He was a steel worker, a carpenter, and impressively enough, he was also the mayor of their town. Now, sadly, Fritz, he was not a healthy child. At a young age, he would contract tuberculosis. And during that time, this was considered a death sentence, as we know. He would actually get tuberculosis several times throughout his life, childhood and adulthood, even having to surgically have a rib removed. Ouch. Now, during my trip at Waverly Hills, the granddaddy of tuberculosis hospitals, I learned that the removal of ribs was one option when it came to TB. But sadly, it had about a 5% chance of survival. Now, I hate to say it because he was a child when he went through this, but seeing the man he would become in life... No, scratch that. The monster. It's a shame that the rib removal didn't claim his life, as it would have saved 8 people's lives later on. You're going to hear about that in a moment. Thorax was the option that people had a better chance at walking out of whatever hospital they were thrown into, hospital, asylum, whatever. thorax is where they would build a little cast cabin. They would put air into it and then collapse the lung. Doing this, they believed that the rest of the lung would indeed heal itself. And it did prove to be somewhat successful, as tuberculosis thrived on oxygen. Much bigger chance at staying alive with thorax than the dreaded removal of the ribs. That is for damn sure. Now, as an adult, Fritz still had problems with tuberculosis, and it didn't help the situation that his wife, she had some problems as well. She was dealing with a horrible case of severe hysteria and intestinal disease. She was also unable to have children. She would get pregnant, but miscarry every single time. At least 6 times she had to go through this. 6 miscarriages. I mean, that is so utterly heartbreaking. But again, I know I hate to say this, but it's probably a good thing she didn't have children, as with what was to come later on. There probably would have been a heck of a lot more victims if there were children involved. Because his wife was so sick, his mother-in-law had taken over feeding her. And it seemed like the only thing that could really help go down right was soup. Remember, she had some horrible intestinal problems. But her mother would usually mess up the food and burn it. How do you manage to burn soup is beyond me. It's like you, it feels like you have to go out of your way to burn soup. And so she wouldn't eat this burned soup, obviously, who would? And she would be starving, basically. So one time she was so upset at not being able to eat, who can blame her, right? That she ran away from home. This enraged Fritz like no other, and he severely beats and whips his mother-in-law. He then threatened murder-suicide if his wife did not come home, and eventually she did, but told him that she felt that he deserved a wife, not a patient. And together, these two people, husband and wife, who have dealt with illnesses most, if not all, of their lives, they promise each other a suicide pact. They choose to die by drowning. And as they enter the water, they are stopped in their tracks as they hear somebody in the nearby area whistling. Don't know if they're whistling a tune or whistling to get these two people's attention, but this stops the double suicide. But again, I can't help but say if they went on with their suicide pact, it would have spared several, and I mean several, innocent lives. So when people went to bed November 30th of 1924, I mean, they had no clue the nightmare of news that would be raging all over town the following morning. That very night, Fritz's wife, she wakes up. She is excruciatingly sick. She's thrown up everywhere. So he's cleaning up the mess. He's used to this. They take care of each other, mostly him taking care of her. And as he's cleaning up the throw up, he overhears his wife and mother-in-law quietly talking about a letter that they had received earlier on. And in this letter, it's revealed by his wife's brother, the person who wrote this letter, that he had contracted syphilis and that, hey, it's easily spread throughout the family and you guys can get it or have it. And when Fritz heard this, he saw red. He went into a frenzy. So the suicide pact between husband and wife, it was basically that Fritz and his wife wanted to die within the same hour of the other. And Fritz knew the time had come. He was sick of being sick all the time. And now with the possibility that, hey, syphilis? Like, really? And so he goes, he grabs a gun. His wife anxiously takes it away from him. She doesn't want to die. I mean, that day, when they were both walking in the water together, this was like an agreed upon thing, but she didn't want to die. So he storms off. He comes back with this huge ass hunting dagger in his hand, and he viciously stabs his ailing wife 20 times. He then proceeds to go to the bathroom to shoot himself so he claims. But he says that both of the firearms that he brought with him did not work. Like, okay, I don't think so. It's like, one, okay, maybe, but two of them? Mm-mm. I don't think so, bud. So he's in the middle of looking for another weapon to kill himself with, when suddenly he hears his mother-in-law scream at the top of her lungs and she starts panicking and crying. It's very obvious that she had just come upon the body of her recently murdered daughter. With anger in his eyes and hate in his heart, he goes to his mother-in-law, the person who had starved her own daughter, the woman who made her own daughter run away. He sees her as a monster, and he murders her. So right now, we have him murdering his wife and his mother-in-law. Doesn't end there, you guys. This is a massacre. One of his servants comes upon the grisly scene, and he kills and burns her body. It's like a horrible, horrible horror movie. Just when you think, oh God, this can't get any worse, another victim's life is claimed. Yeah. People keep coming and the death toll keeps rising, my friends. So his sister-in-law, who is a teenager, she arrives. She traveled all night via train to visit her family, only to have her life snuffed away from her by somebody that she trusted, her own brother-in-law. Fritz would also murder as they arrived, like leading lambs to the slaughter, the bookkeeper, a clerk, the gardener's son, and another employee. He would also go on to kill his own German shepherd. It was found with its head completely caved in. This man, this monster, this sadistic animal had so much hate and anger running through his veins, and sadly, so many people and a dog had to suffer because of that. So what started out as a suicide pact, right, becomes a massacre, with half of the suicide pact still alive, mind you, and responsible for the massacre. So Fritz Heinrich Ingerstein goes into town where he says that his family and him had been attacked and that everybody died and that he was left for dead. And he manages to stab himself a couple of times to try to convince people of the stupid, cowardly story. And for a while, believe it or not, his story is believed. A rumor started that well over a dozen murderous bandits were roaming in the area and looking for their next family of victims' lives to come claim. This obviously terrified the public, not knowing if they would be the next ones to die, and authorities knew they had to do something. So they hired several other law enforcement agencies and searched far and wide for these so-called murderous bandits. Eventually, suspicion fell onto Fritz as his fingerprints were found on the dagger and other murder weapons, and he finally admits to the heinous crimes, the deaths of his family and employees. So in that one night, this one monster would claim 8 victims, named in the order that they were killed: his wife, his mother-in-law, the maid servant, his sister-in-law, the bookkeeper, the clerk, the gardener's son, and the gardener's assistant. He is found guilty of murder, arson, bribery, and embezzlement, and he is beheaded November 17th of 1925. Good riddance, dude. Peter Curtin is another man you heard me talk about in the Vampire Killer episode. So again, we are going to go quickly past him. Before being executed, this was the eerie last words of the Vampire of Dusseldorf.
Tell me, after my head is chopped off, will I still be able to hear, at least for a moment, the sound of my own blood gushing from the stump of my neck? That would be a pleasure to end all pleasures.
One of the final executions that Gropler conducted was the duo execution of 2 women, Baroness Benita Ursula von Falkenhayn and Renate von Notzimmer, marking Germany's final axe beheadings. These women were spies for the Second Polish Republic. found guilty of treason and espionage, and they were executed February 18th of 1935. I found more details from executedtoday.com, and I quote, "The old Scharfrichter bent von Falkenhayn over a rude block and crashed his heavy blade clearly through her neck, dropping her head into a basket. After a hurry to clean up, they repeated the same ritual for Renate von Notzimmer." Adolf Gustav Seefeld was a serial killer known as the Sandman and Uncle TikTok due to his occupation of working with grandfather clocks. At a young age, he had a bad reputation and even serves 25-year sentence for molesting a child. He spent much of his life in mental institutes and confined to prison cells as well. During the Third Reich, he went on to murder 12 young boys. The number may be higher, but we know of 12 known victims. This monster would use chloroform, or something similar to that, where he can get total control and access over his young, unsuspecting victim. While they were under the effect of chloroform, he would rape his victim. This includes oral. Then he would leave the defenseless child in the forest where they would succumb to the elements and usually to hypothermia. And I believe it is said that he did strangle some of them as well. So just a true monster, obviously. Like Peter Curtin, he showed true excitement about being executed by the guillotine, and he was really excited for his head to leave his body. Again, this is just like really, truly sick, sick stuff. He was executed May 23rd, 1936. Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others. They're all phenomenal. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to lose sleep over it, my friends. Just hit up any of those podcast platforms such as CastBox, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Blueberry, Podcast Republic. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, for lending me those amazing listening vessels, and
I will see you next week.